In December, Sony's romantic comedy Anyone But You debuted in theaters nationwide. It's the latest in a long line of hit films adapted from the works of Shakespeare. In fact, he holds the world record for being the most filmed author in any language. A Shakespeare scholar is with us to talk about what makes the Bard's work a hit across time, space, and medium. And we want to hear from you at 800-642-1234. What's your favorite Shakespeare play that you've read or seen? And what's your favorite screen adaptation of his work? Do you think his plays work better on stage or on screen? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or email us at ideas@wpr.org. Erica Moulton is an assistant professor in the Literature, Writing, and Film Department at UW-Whitewater, where she studies adaptation, screenwriting, and film history. Erica, welcome to Central Time.
Thank you so much for having me.
Well, let's start off with the most recent adaptation of Shakespeare's work, Anyone But You. This was based on Much Ado About Nothing. What did you think of it?
I enjoyed the film quite a bit. I saw it this past weekend, and I really liked how it sort of took elements of Shakespeare's work, the kind of enemies to lovers plot, and transposed it to a lot of the sort of trappings we would expect to see in a modern rom-com. So I thought it was very cute and charming.
What are some of your favorite direct film adaptations of Shakespeare's plays?
Well, probably the one that I love the most is Orson Welles' film from 1965, Chimes at Midnight. Maybe slightly less well-known, but it sort of mashes up the Henry IV plays with little bits of Henry V and Richard II and a little dash of Merry Wives of Windsor. And it's sort of Wells trying to tell the story of Henry IV as he sort of ascended to power and the kind of triangle that it develops between him and his son, Prince Hal, and the sort of errant Lord Falstaff, who sort of corrupts the young prince. But yeah, it's a really spectacular film made on this kind of shoestring budget with Wells sort of financing it by appearing in bad European films. And he sort of went back and forth, you know, with the cast, bringing them back to Spain where they filmed it. And out of all of this chaos, this incredible portrait of these three men and emerges. And there's also this amazing commentary on the Vietnam War that's sort of built into the film. So I would highly recommend people seek it out if they have not seen it before.
I have not seen it. I'll put it on my list. Thanks. I'm curious, like, from your point of view, what makes a successful Shakespeare adaptation? What's the recipe like?
Yeah, that's a really good question. I think for me, there's sort of two main factors. One is if the filmmaker and the sort of actors embodying the characters have a really defined take on the character, if that makes sense. Mm-hmm. I think part of the joy of having Shakespeare plays, you know, seeing them on stage and seeing them on film and just seeing multiple adaptations is you get people sort of getting multiple bites at the apple. And there's so much to sort of, you know, grapple with in Shakespeare's texts that there are so many different interpretations of the characters. So that for me is really interesting. If the kind of interpretation of the character is something that I haven't seen before. And then I'd say for film, the other part of it is there a kind of interesting visual take on the material? Some of my favorite adaptations, like Julie Taymor's Titus, which is another kind of lesser known of Shakespeare's plays, has this really, really bold visual take on the material. It sort of mashes up all the periods of Roman history. So you have sort of like punks next to people in togas, next to people in sort of like Mussolini gear. It's a really, really interesting interpretation of that play.
Do you feel like there's anything that really has to stay the same in an adaptation? Or maybe it depends on whether you're doing a director-inspired adaptation.
Yeah, I think it definitely is. It's sort of I'm perfectly happy with either. Again, I think it sort of just depends on how inspired the inspiration is. You know, sometimes something like 10 Things I Hate About You does a really good job of taking The Taming of the Shrew, which, you know, on its face is kind of a misogynistic play, has pretty regressive views towards women, and actually kind of turns it into, you know, I'm not going to say like a incredibly bold feminist statement, but a kind of, you know, quietly feminist film about this teenager that, you know, is perceived by the outside world as a kind of shrew, as this sort of, you know, nasty, you know, woman. And the film sort of says, well, there's nothing wrong with her. Like, that's the whole point, is, you know, he doesn't need to tame her at all. She's fine just the way she is.
we talked a little bit about setting and how, you know, that can be changed a little bit. And one of the popular direct adaptations of Shakespeare's work is Baz Luhrmann's version of Romeo and Juliet. This is set in a modern day beach town, guns instead of swords, right? So here's a clip of Leonardo DiCaprio as Romeo.
Mercutio's soul is but a little way above our heads. Stay for thine to keep him company.
Thou wretched boy, shalt with him hand.
Thou, or I, or both must go with him. Either thou, or I, or both must go with him. Either thou, or I, or both must go with him.
Man, it was a great movie. But what does it say about Shakespeare's work that we're just able to switch up the setting so freely? And I mean, what is changing the setting do to the story in this and other examples?
Yeah, I mean, that's an interesting one, especially the Romeo plus Juliet. I think that one, it allows the plays to sort of speak to new audiences. I think that's one of the main things that is so appealing about switching up the time and the place is you get to sort of comment on so many things that are built into the play, but then sort of can appeal to, you know, an issue of the moment. I mean, I think Baz Luhrmann is really canny taking these sort of MTV visuals and kind of trying to, you know, have young people in 1996 sort of relate to those characters. That one is an interesting one, though, because I think in some ways it doesn't really make a ton of sense with Romeo and Juliet, sort of what's happening. I mean, I get a lot of joy out of that film. I think that film is really fun. The feuds between, like, warring corporate CEOs,
maybe
I'm not sure, like ancient grudge breaks into mutiny. Like, it kind of makes sense. It also kind of, you know, doesn't make a whole lot of sense that they would have like roaming gangs of their sort of
so true.
Nephews fighting so in the streets. But, you know,
we're with Erica Moulton. She's assistant professor in the literature, writing, and film department at UW Whitewater, talking about film adaptations of the works of Shakespeare and why they're so popular. We'd love to hear what you think at 800-642-1234. What do you think makes these plays so special, or are you skeptical of Shakespeare's work? 800-642-1234 or email us ideas@wpr.org. We'll pick up the conversation coming up next on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time. I'm Shereen Seward, in for Rob Ferret. We continue our conversation with Erica Moulton, assistant professor in the Literature, Writing, and Film Department at UW-Whitewater. We're talking about film adaptations of the works of Shakespeare and what makes them successful. You can join in, 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or email us at ideas@wpr.org. Erica, I'm really curious from an educator standpoint, if these films really help teachers better communicate what Shakespeare is all about for students of really any age.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I personally find them incredibly useful. For one thing, I think, you know, putting sort of faces to the sort of words on the page helps the characters come alive so much more effectively. It's always great when there are productions, like theater productions of the Shakespeare plays sort of happening at the same time. But, you know, the films are sort of always there. And then showing students different versions of the plays also kind of demonstrate to them the flexibility of the text, that there are kind of multiple interpretations of these characters and their motivations and the resonance of these stories. So yeah, I use them in the classroom all the time.
Well, yeah. And I mean, are there things we can achieve with film that maybe you can't on stage or on the page?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that kind of gets to one of the kind of enduring appeals of Shakespeare's text, which is the characters are so vibrant and there are so many kind of complex psychological motivations that you can sort of get at in film with using film techniques, using voiceover, using just the language of the camera to convey that, you know, doesn't really exist on stage. And there are a lot of scholars of Shakespeare's work that sort of look at his plays and actually sort of think of them in cinematic terms, you know, compared to a lot of the other Elizabethan playwrights, he tended to switch scenes far more often. So, you know, people have sort of interpreted that as him almost desiring a kind of cross cutting, that he could kind of cut between different conversations happening at the same time. So I think the plays themselves often really lend themselves to cinematic adaptation.
And why else are Shakespeare's works so popular, and why do they persist through time and medium? I mean, it's years and years and years, and these, you know, it still resonates with audiences.
Yeah, it's, I mean, it's crazy. I think a lot of it is just maybe down to personal preference. I mean, I know that, you know, obviously it has a long kind of cultural endurance, but it also, you know, Shakespeare's plays provoke such strong reactions in people. You know, I know a lot of my students just really, really hate the plays. You know, they have this sort of, this kind of perfect kind of cultural, you know, they're sort of on a pedestal in a way. For me, again, I think it comes down to the characters and even the archetypes that are in the plays. So like the quarreling lovers and the power-hungry tyrants and the wise fools, those characters can almost be removed from the plays, and they're so pervasive in the kinds of stories that we tell to each other, and they kind of apply, you know, across cultures and across time and across nations. So that just lends it to, you know, them constantly being recycled and renewed. But yeah, no, I mean, I think there is also the sense that he provokes such strong reactions to people, and that kind of helps keep it alive. The kind of ongoing debate as, you know, do these plays really matter? Do they actually speak to people? That, I think, kind of foments the flames of the debate about Shakespeare.
I'm really curious about how you were introduced to Shakespeare in the first place. Was this something maybe in high school, or did you always love it?
Well, my mom gave me her Riverside Complete Works of Shakespeare when I was probably maybe around 10 or 11. So I was introduced to it through just reading the plays. And I don't think I really understood them that well at that age. I think I was a very theatrical child. I loved being in plays and performing. And so I just really loved reading the you know, kind of poetry, the language. And then when I was about 12, I was in a production of Hamlet as Gertrude. And that was also just kind of an early awakening moment. Getting to embody those characters on stage was so much fun. And that just sort of sparked a kind of ongoing love of theater. I acted in theater all through high school, and then I think sort of through film and in college, that really helped keep my love of Shakespeare alive.
Do you feel like your understanding of Shakespeare was influenced by screen adaptations as you were growing up? I mean, did it help you kind of get more of a comprehensive view of his work?
Yeah, I think absolutely. Certainly a play like Richard III, I remember when I first read it, you know, I sort of understood it in sort of the large terms, like, oh, this is sort of this evil character who's sort of power hungry and kind of systematically takes out members of his family. But seeing the Ian McKellen version from 1995, directed by Richard Longcrane, to me that really helped kind of crystallize some of the themes of the play, that it's not just about evil, it's sort of about the ways in which, you know, society kind of corrupts itself. And Ian McKellen takes the play and sort of sets it in a kind of alternate reality, 1930s fascist England, and sort of makes it very clear that, that, you know, Richard and his ability to sort of rise and, you know, ascend the kind of rungs of power is very much because he's enabled by the society that creates him. And so for me, that was a really kind of illuminating moment.
Yeah. Well, the romantic comedy genre has, of course, seen some of the most popular movies inspired by Shakespeare. Where we talked about this a little bit, but I want to play a clip from 10 Things I Hate About You. This, of course, was adapted from Shakespeare's The Taming of the Shrew.
I hate the way you talk to me and the way you cut your hair. I hate the way you drive my car. I hate it when you stare. I hate your big dumb combat boots and the way you read my mind. I hate you so much it makes me sick. It even makes me rhyme. I hate it. I hate the way you're always right. I hate it when you lie. I hate it when you make me laugh. Even worse when you make me cry. I hate it when you're not around and the fact that you didn't call. But mostly I hate the way I don't hate you. Not even close. Not even a little bit. Not even at all.
That's Julia Stiles. She was reciting her character's take on Shakespeare's sonnet 141. Talk a little bit about how modern romantic comedies have been influenced by Shakespeare.
Yeah, I mean, I think both Taming of the Shrew and Much Ado About Nothing really set the kind of template for modern romantic comedies. The sort of sparring lovers is just such a kind of consistent trope throughout the history of romantic comedies. And in particular, I mean, like I said, 10 Things I Hate About You, you know, has this, the play itself, you know, has this really misogynistic view of women that, you know, that they need to be tamed. And, you know, you sort of see that in some adaptations like Kiss Me, Kate, which is sort of takes the Taming of the Shrew and, you know, creates a musical around it, but has this sort of play within a play. But yeah, Much Ado About Nothing sort of, for me, is the true template, because it's sort of about this kind of skirmish of wit, which is actually a quote from the play that's actually cited in Anyone But You, which I thought was really clever. The film kind of takes little bits and pieces of the Shakespeare text and embeds them in the visuals of the film. And the thing that's great about Much Ado About Nothing is it's about this skirmish of wit of equals, that it's about the man and the woman sort of both having a lot of issues, you know, things they have to get over, sort of getting in front of themselves, or, you know, when it comes to try to finding love. But it is ultimately about the two of them kind of coming together and meeting their match, which I would say is sort of, you know, the kind of consistent template for almost all rom-coms.
Erica, I want to thank you for joining us today. I've got some movies on my list now that I must see. So thank you so very much.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me. This was really fun.
Erica Moulton is an assistant professor in the Literature, Writing, and Film Department at UW-Whitewater. She talked with us about what makes Shakespeare's work a hit across time, space, and medium, especially film.